Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On today's show, we are celebrating Native American History Month by speaking with three Indigenous chefs about how they use traditional foods to resist colonization and educate communities about the healing benefits of traditional foods. Joining us are Kimberly Tilson Braveheart, co-owner of the Etiquette Catering Company in Rapid City, South Dakota. Kim is a member of the Oglala Lakota Nation of the Pine Ridge Indian Reserve in South Dakota. She co-founded the South Dakota Indian Business Alliance and has helped launch over 187 small businesses across the country, primarily on Indian reserves. Chef Braveheart says, "My existence is because of the resilience of my people." Hi, Kim. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Great to have you. Elena Terry is executive chef and founder of Wild Berries, a nonprofit community outreach catering company that helps heal and educate Indigenous communities through ancestral food. Elena is based in Wisconsin Dells and is a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation. Hi, Elena. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello. Thank you for the invite. I'm excited for the conversation today.
Well, we're excited to have you. And Crystal Wapepa is the chef and owner of the recently opened Wapepa's Kitchen in Oakland's Fruitvale Village. Everyone on her staff is Indigenous. Crystal was born and raised in Oakland and is an enrolled member of the Kickapoo Nation of Oklahoma. She's a recipient of the Indigenous Artist Activist Award and has been inducted into the Native American Almanac for being one of the first Native women to own a catering business. In 2016, Crystal Wapepa was the first Native chef to compete in the Food Network's show Chopped. Hi, Crystal. Thank you so much for joining us and huge congratulations on the opening of your restaurant.
Oh, thank you. And I just want to extend my gratitude for you guys supporting us, especially here in the Bay Area. I want to say hello to Kimberly and I want to say hello to Elena Terry.
Well, Crystal, I want to start off with you because I'm hoping to bring my dad, who is Pomo and Paiute, to your restaurant next weekend. And last night I showed him a video of you and the logo of your restaurant. And he had so much pride in his face. He said, "I didn't know there was a Native American restaurant." I mean, he was just so happy to see the work you're doing and your logo. And I just wonder I'm sure you hear that all the time from Native people. What has that experience been like for you?
Oh, this experience has been priceless, especially when you told me just now that your dad is Pomo and Paiute, and that's something that I have in my family. My kids are Pomo, and I have family members that are Paiute. And when I have different people from different tribes come into the restaurant, it's pretty much, I can't really, all my words I can say is priceless. Because we have a lot of elders in our community that comes out, and when they come and eat the food and see this Indigenous environment of, we have Native Bay Area powwow music playing. We have, like, you know, I really try to represent and actually honor one whose land we're on. The other is all different tribes that I grew up here. And so we have their foods, and we had an elder the other day. She had came in, and it was pretty much, it made me tear up, and she started crying, and then she gave me a big hug, and it makes me want to cry right now. And she said in her lifetime she thought she'll never see a place like this in the Bay Area.
Wow. You're making me think about my grandparents and my great grandmother. I wish they were here to see this, because it would have been such an amazing experience for them. Kim, I want to ask you a similar question, because I was just looking at your Facebook feed and you visited, is it Owamni by the Sous Chef? This is a restaurant in, it's in Minneapolis, right? Yes, Minneapolis.
It is. And yep, it's in Minneapolis.
You wrote about just what an incredible experience that was to go to that restaurant, which is Native owned.
Yeah, Native owned, Native operated, chef driven. Sean Sherman is a dear friend of mine and mentor, I think, to many of us.
And going there, I actually got to see it before it opened, and then going and having dinner with my dear friends and having that experience was incredible. And I was literally moved to tears. I think that as a young Indigenous woman, I've, you know, been preparing this food, and it's important to me and my community and my people, but having it in this elevated experience that felt like we were really seen was beautiful. And the food was incredible, and flavors that I had never had before, which is unique for a chef, I think. And the entire experience was incredibly moving.
What response do you hear from Native people about the work that you do? I mean, just looking at your website's gorgeous. The food that you prepare is gorgeous. What do you have any experiences that really stand out for you?
I actually just had this woman, she's a producer, and she flew in to town to experience my food, and she was brought to tears. And she said, I've been all over the world. I've tasted some of the best, been to some of the best restaurants in the world, but this food is moving and I can feel it, like, heal me. And I can feel how important this experience is. And I've never had this flavor profile before. And I got teary listening to her and watching her be so moved by it. And I'm stopped very often by elders in my community who just say, thank you for elevating us and elevating our people seeing that we are successful and sophisticated and have all the things that anyone else can be and more, while also honoring and representing our culture and people.
Wow. What about you, Elena, as executive chef and founder of Wildberries? Looking at photos on your website, it looks like you go to farmers markets with your food. Can you talk about some of the experiences you've had?
Sure. Well, first, I don't sell at farmers markets. I think the pictures you saw were probably of me sourcing things. I get to do a lot of traveling and community building and community outreach. So one of the things that I like to do when I'm in a space like California or Albuquerque is stop at the incredible farmers markets. I mean, there's no better flavors than straight from the cultivators. So it's always exciting for me to stop by the farmers market, but I don't have a product that I sell there.
Okay. Sorry about that. I was just seeing these photos. It looked like you were selling at farmers markets, but what is it like for you, out being there as an Indigenous woman catering? What have you heard from other Indigenous people about the work that you do?
So being a nonprofit, I have a little bit different stance or outlook on things. And a lot of what I do is we work to bring people back to the community who have suffered a disconnect through alcohol and other drug abuse or emotional traumas, and really use food as this wonderful vessel to bring them back and to share a meal that's nourishing. For me, growing up, being around our traditional foods was always in a place of ceremony. And so when I was just starting to cook as a really, really young girl, my grandmothers used to always tell me that when you're in this kitchen, you have to have good feelings because that goes into the food. And when you really want to heal somebody or nourish them, you have to do that with good feelings and a positive heart. And so I'm blessed to be able to go into other communities and share that experience with the next generation or the elders and whoever is welcome in my kitchen. And I love to cook with them. So I'm definitely blessed to be able to have that aspect of cooking involved.
What has your experience been like working with Native youth? Because this must also be so empowering for them.
Absolutely. I do a lot of work with Native youth. I actually work at Dream of Wild Health, which is a nonprofit farm in the Minneapolis area. And I go for 2 weeks out of the summer and work with the youth and show them how to cook food directly from the farm. So we go and harvest and then I show them how to use those ingredients in the kitchen. It's just wonderful. I feel like all the work that we're doing and the way that we're doing it is paving a path that might be a little bit clearer for them to come through. And I really believe in the mentorship. I know Kim touched on it. But it's the way we naturally learned, and being able to see someone and tell them that you appreciate them and what can I do to help you along? It really changes the dynamic of a kitchen that we're used to, of this brigade system. Right. And that support and knowledge sharing and encouragement hopefully will have them progress farther than we have. And I would love to see that happen.
What about you, Crystal? What has your experience been like working with Native youth and then having Native youth come to the restaurant?
Oh, that's one of my favorites, is having mentees for Native youth. Like, for instance, with my catering for many years, for about 8 to 9 years, I had a lot of youth. And actually the youth right now I have a few working for me in the restaurant right now, and the others are really doing a lot of Native farm work and a lot of seed keeping work here in the Bay Area. But this, for me personally, because where the restaurant is based, we have an indigenous school not too far from here that resides like a charter school of 100 students. And to have this restaurant here and to see the youth are walking around where they're curious. We're actually doing something with them in the school after the holidays. To me, it's all worth it. And to have Native youth actually apply for different job positions here, which we have around 3 of them, as Lakota, as we have Pomo, and then also that we have, do we have a Paiute? I think she's Paiute in Washoe. As servers here, and you can see their faces. They're really prideful, and also them knowing the knowledge of their foods, especially we're here in the urban area, so it can be lost, especially in living in a big city. You know, our cultural ways and our foods can be easily lost, but to have Wapikwa's Kitchen right here in the Native community is a must, and something where these youth need to see something like with everything that Kimberly's doing, especially everything what Elena is doing, how she gives herself and she travels. And these youth need to see this to carry on for the next generation. And that's why we're here, and that's why we're doing it. I talk really quick, sorry.
No, please. We have time. Take your time.
Okay. A beautiful example. So this Saturday, I'm so honored to have one of our Kickapoo elders come at our restaurant with 10 other Kickapoo tribal members that are coming. And to me, that is priceless. And this is what our work is about, because at the same time, we do have other Kickapoo youth that are not from here, but they're here and they want to come meet the elder. And so, to me personally, this is why this establishment and this restaurant is here, just because of those things.
Oh, I love that. If you're in the Bay Area, you can find more information about Crystal Wapepa and her recently opened Wapepa's Kitchen. It's in Oakland's Fruitvale Village. Kimberly, what would you add about the power of doing this work and what it means to young Native people?
I believe that invisibility is the last step in genocide. And so I believe that all the work that we do, invisibility is impacting our young people to say, if I see it, I can be it, and I can own it and do it. And I think all of that, that pride and that confidence building. I work with a lot of Native youth. I have for the last 20 years around financial literacy, entrepreneurship development, professional development, customer service training. And oftentimes during the holidays and special events, I have anywhere between 5 and 15 Native youth that I'm working with. And I think working in this base, that base of like cultural values and who we are as people, and really taking ownership of that and being able to see how we contribute into our communities in that same way is really important. But also just like the confidence building of relating to people outside of your direct community and having conversations and greeting people, I also think is really important. And yeah, I enjoy it. It's fun.
I think this is so important, because I feel for young people today with technology and the phones, and things are moving so fast, and a lot of people are disconnected, and mentorship is so incredibly important. Kim, can you give us a couple examples of some of the Native youth you're working with right now and some of the projects they're working on?
Yeah, sure. My son is 15 and he actually went on a traditional buffalo harvest today. And so he's field harvesting a buffalo with all of his classmates, with my cousins, Lisa and Arlo Ironcloud. And I think that experience is really important. And it's the same thing that we've done with our children of teaching them, you know, this is how we hunt, this is how we harvest and we procure berries and animals in our community and culturally, traditionally. I think that's also really important. I am working with a couple of young people who are musicians and showing the same thing that you don't have to be like, I don't know if this is the right way to say it, but we always say, oh, you know, this is a good, like a successful Native person. And for me, it's really important to just be like, I am a successful person and I can compete in any market. And recognizing myself as competitive with any catering company, with any, you know, rather than just saying, you know, I am this because I'm Native, I think is important. And one of my students I have actually been working with since they were 10 years old. And we did a fine dining experience in Kyle, South Dakota for the president of the World Bank. And this was 15 years ago. And that young person is now an executive for a nonprofit organization here in Rapid City. And he tells me all the time, that skill set that you taught me of customer service, of relating to people, of making eye contact and communication has provided so much opportunity for me and is life changing. And I think also when young people are seen by other adults that are outside of their direct family, it's a really powerful thing because then they also feel accountable to you, to your business. They're representing you, even if they've moved on. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's really important.
Great stories. Kimberly Tilson Braveheart is co-owner of the Etiquette Catering Company in Rapid City, South Dakota. Kim is a member of the Oglala Lakota Nation of the Pine Ridge Indian Reserve in South Dakota. Elena Terry is executive chef and founder of Wildberries, a nonprofit that helps heal and educate indigenous communities through ancestral food. Elena is a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation. And Crystal Wapapa is chef and owner of the recently opened Wapapa's Kitchen in Oakland's Fruitvale Village. Everyone on her staff is indigenous. Crystal was born and raised in Oakland and is an enrolled member of the Kickapoo Nation of Oklahoma. And if you have any questions or comments for our three chefs on the show today, any questions about indigenous foods, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. So let's talk a little bit more about the food. Crystal, I loved learning that you source all of your produce from indigenous farms in the Bay Area. And I understand it took a while to make that happen. Can you tell us more about that?
Oh, yes. It took a long while. it took a long while to make that happen. We pretty much, we have Cultural Conservancy, which grows all of our squash. We just received like our last bit of our Hubbard squash that looks very, very beautiful. And then we have our buffalo squash and, you know, and then we also have Deep Medicine Circle. That's what's with Sage LaPena and then, of course, Rupa Myra, which they have a property right over there near Santa Cruz. And so that's where our lettuce and everything has been harvested from. And then also, we have Seguarte Land Trust that is a huge supporter of ours. And actually, we just love the relationship with them right now. They're harvesting the acorn. And then also just different farmers that comes to us. And then we have Felipe, which is in Sebastopol area. He's been growing our corn for like the past 6-7 years right now. And so we just received the last bit of our corn on that. And then with the other, I am a member of the American Indian Food Producers. And so we source a lot of our maple, wild rice, and so forth, and more other dried corn from them.
You also say that you really enjoy this because people can try foods that they never knew were indigenous. Can you give us a few examples?
Oh, yes. That's one of my favorite parts. This is probably why I love what I do. I love creating, but then I love also presenting, like, for instance, especially here at the restaurant, we've been having a lot of diverse, different people coming in and trying, and people will tell me what tribes they're from. And it makes my heart so happy because I know I was born and raised here in the Bay Area, and we have such a huge different tribal communities that are here. But I love going to my shelf, where I call it the Indigenous Food Pantry. I love reaching out into my shelf. For instance, like you mentioned that your father is Paiute and Pomo. And so I love to get like the Paiute pine nuts and bring them out, and you can see their faces and how we create and what we do with our dishes. And it's just something, to me, I feel that's very important because we do have people that have come here and they are different tribes. And when you see that in their faces of, you know, just things, I always mention things that I grew up on because I grew up here in California, but I also am Kickapoo, and I, you know, I honor my foods, but also at the same time, I have so many different tribal family members here in the Bay Area. I always love presenting and showing their food in a respectful kind of way on a plate, and they love it.
Elena, this also speaks to the fact that so many people are disconnected from where their food comes from. Mm. I mean, so many small food companies have been bought up by the big companies. And that's pretty much everything. Packaged food is now everywhere. Fast food is everywhere. I mean, especially in low-income communities. So can you talk about how you tackle that to really teach people about where their food comes from and why that is so important?
Sure. I think the best way to tackle that is to lead by example. And honestly, I can testify that we were the fast food family, and we only ate our indigenous foods at ceremony like 10 years ago. And we decided that as a family, we were going to start incorporating more of these ingredients just like once a week. And it turned into, instead of just having an ingredient once a week, we would have a full all indigenous meal once a week. And now that's the way we primarily eat. I mean, it has taken years to get to that point, but like my kids don't enjoy going through a drive-through. It's kind of a last stop if we have to, and we're on the road. But I think for me, I can say that it has healed me. You know, it has connected me in different ways to our ancestors. And it has made me realize the importance of this moment and the intention that we're setting in place for future generations. So what can I do today to make sure that my grandchildren will have that connection to me? Mm. And I really think it is just by inviting them along and doing the work together and really leading by example. Mm.
It's such a good point. I mean, I had similar examples in my family with fast food. And we all know that that can lead to, you know, major, major health issues. What would you add to that, Kim, really focusing on where the food comes from and, you know, why that is so important?
I really believe it relates back to, you know, this whole land back movement. Mm. And a lot of people don't quite understand what land back means. And land back is about not just getting our land back, but connecting us to our culture, our identity, our foods, our language, and healing us and taking back what is rightfully ours. And, you know, I come from a long line of social activists. My brother is Nick Tilson, the president and CEO of Endian Collective. And through my own activism and healing and learning, I've been empowered by how our indigenous foods connect us to our spirit, our spirituality, and our land and our language, and how, when we're teaching other people about that, how it can heal us and heal our spirits. And I think it's a really powerful thing when we start taking ownership of it. You know, for all transparency's sake, my family owns Tonka Bar as well. And it is a packaged food item, but it's really related to our traditional food, wasna, which is buffalo and berries, and how that gives you energy. Those food items literally give us energy to help fuel us, to keep up the fight, to keep, you know, and as activists, we cook together, we eat together, we prepare prepare for, you know, the next battle, the next line of defense. And part of that is, you know, having these foods that nurture us and nurture our spirits.
Mm. We're going to take a quick break. That is Kimberly Tilson Braveheart, co-owner of the Etiquette Catering Company in Rapid City, South Dakota. Elena Terry, executive chef and founder of Wildberries, and Crystal Wapepa, chef and owner of the recently opened Wapepa's Kitchen in Oakland's Fruitvale Village. On today's Your Call, we're celebrating Native American History Month by speaking with three indigenous chefs about how they use traditional foods to resist colonization and educate communities about the healing benefits of traditional foods. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll speak with Darius Coombs, a Mashpee Wampanoag, who will discuss the history of Indigenous peoples and the first English settlers who arrived on the Mayflower in 1621, 400 years ago. His people have been in what is now Massachusetts for over 12,000 years, and they are still here today. And then on Thursday, we will rebroadcast a show with Professor David Silverman about his book, This Land is Their Land, The Wampanoag Indians, Plymouth Colony, and the Troubled History of Thanksgiving. Today, we are marking Native American History Month by speaking with three Indigenous chefs. Kimberly Tilson Braveheart is co-owner of the Etiquette Catering Company in Rapid City, South Dakota. Elena Terry is executive chef and founder of Wildberries. This is a nonprofit that helps heal and educate Indigenous communities. Crystal Wapepa is chef and owner of the recently opened Wapepa's Kitchen in Oakland's Fruitvale Village. Everyone on her staff is Indigenous. And if you have any questions or comments for our guest today, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. You know, Kim, just thinking about what you said before the break and thinking about the show that we're doing tomorrow, when I was reading about the fact that the Mayflower arrived in 1621, I had to kind of look at that twice and do some research. And I thought, wait a minute, that happened 400 years ago? How is this not getting more attention? I mean, the fact that it happened 400 years ago, it seems like that should be major news. I mean, I'm seeing there's a lot more happening for sure. But, you know, the media love these kind of anniversaries, the 400th. And I'm just not seeing it. I wonder if you have any thoughts on that.
Oh, I mean, my view is different than probably most. But I believe that, you know, I think with the relearning and unlearning and understanding of what colonization is, and, you know, Thanksgiving is, you know, Thanksgiving, right, is like, was taken from us, you know, and it's literally a celebration of mass genocide. And so I think that some of the language has been like, you know, like, let's, I mean, I've even noticed marketing here in South Dakota has been the holiday, that they're not really calling it, you know, what it is. So I don't know. I mean, that's my opinion about it. I think that the more people can understand what colonization is and what decolonization is, I think that will help educate more people around learning. And that's kind of what we're doing about foods, right? Is about the decolonizing of our diets, right? Of that, you know, when we were forced onto reservations, we were given, you know, flour, sugar, oil, and that's where that root of fry bread, aka colonization bread, it comes from, right? Mm-hmm. And so, but it was a means of survival. And so when we start learning about, okay, what are actually our traditional foods? Those are the foods that connected us to our land and to our people. And so, you know, and ceremony, and, you know, those foods are important to us. I mean, it sounds silly, but I even make wasna, which is a very spiritual traditional food, for my children almost once a week, because I want them to remember that meat and berry that are literally why I believe they exist today. Mm. Is that food help prepare my people to survive all winter long, and is our resilience food. And I want my children to remember that, and remember that those flavors and what they mean to them as Lakota people.
What is the food called?
It's called wasna.
Wasna. And what is it?
It's a dried buffalo, and with choke cherries traditionally, but lately I've been using frozen berries because it's what I have access to. And that's actually one thing I do want to say as well. Part of the learning and relearning of our indigenous foods is not everyone is given these traditional teachings and have been raised or grown up in those traditional teachings. And there is no shame in that. And I think that learning about, oh, these foods and what these foods mean to my people is a part of our growth as indigenous people, and is powerful. And I'm going to be honest with you, like, I use a lot of my choke cherries for my ceremonies. And so when I'm just making wasna for my kids, I grab the wild frozen organic blueberries and I make that wasna because access is important to me, and relevancy. And, you know, so you want to make these foods approachable to anyone, not just indigenous chefs or not just indigenous spiritual people. Or fluent speakers or full bloods or whatever, you know, getting really intense and all of that, but like really making accessible to all of us.
Yeah. No, I think this, oh, it's such a great point, Kim. Crystal, what would you add?
Oh, definitely what, me personally, what I offer is, just like with Kim, I'm going to touch on, Kim, what she was talking about is, for the berries. I love berries. I got a freezer full of berries. And that's something in my household with my children. We love making, it's, you know, in the Lakota language, what it's the berry pudding, it's called rojake. We make that a lot. And that's one of my kids' favorite. And then also, I always like to harvest them and freeze them. And how I serve them. Like lately we've been doing we have a lot of blackberries. We have a lot of choke cherries. We've been doing a lot on our salmon. And when I introduce that on a salmon dish, people are like, wait, what is this? This is berries along salmon. But you know, for me, that's, it's colorful, vibrant, and something that a lot of people don't really realize, especially when we see a lot of berries. I don't think berries and native land kind of connect, but it's all a huge connection. It's something that was always harvested in my family, and it passed down to me, to my children. And now it's something that I celebrate. When you see berries on any of my dish, that has a lot to do with honoring my elders and my family. And so that's something I really love to celebrate, not just because I love berries, and I want everybody else to love berries, of course, but also it has a really good memory spot for me, as for my grandfather, as we would harvest berries in Oklahoma, and he would tell me these beautiful stories. And also me living up on the reservation in Hoopa, you know, I got to go harvest berries with my aunties, and it, to me, that's something that, I always like to represent and let them, everybody, taste and see, and something I don't want to ever go away. I want people to know and celebrate all these beautiful berries that belong to this land. And I also would like to say, we're talking about land back. What is the meaning of land back? Wapi Pa's Kitchen is definitely a land back. When you see this Native American restaurant in celebration of all these employees that I have and they, how they serve and what we serve. This is also a celebration of land back, the space.
Well, you, on your website, Crystal, the menu yes. looks absolutely amazing, especially these, they're blue corn, is it Swamnate bars?
Oh, yeah, the Swamnate bars, and Kickapoo, it means good energy.
Oh, it I love that.
Like rock good energy, yes. And so, actually, I created that right when we went into the COVID. I'm going to call it the COVID lockdown. But then I also love to use other indigenous ingredients and to create. And so that's something that that is good energy. And it literally, it's still going. we're still serving a lot of bars and shipping. We ship all over up to Canada, all oh, over wow. the nation for our bars. And it comes in three different flavors.
Well, the ingredients I'm looking at right now sound amazing. Mm-hmm. Wild rice, amaranth, chocolate choke cherries, yeah. and chocolate rose hips.
Yes.
That sounds incredible. Before we get to a few calls, I just wanted to ask Elena if you have anything to add based on what you've heard from Kim and Crystal.
Yes. I think that's a beautiful movement that towards decolonization as much as we can in today's society and really reclaiming our space, not only as Indigenous chefs or as mothers or as natives even, but it's the acknowledgement. You know, you spoke before about the Mayflower and in the anniversary coming up, and it's really hard. And I don't think people realize how much that some of those things trigger these feelings that are, that were very hurtful still 400 years later, we're trying to heal from this. And so, and I know that it's undeniable what happened and the actions that were taken against Indigenous peoples were obviously very traumatizing because here we are several centuries later, still trying to heal from that. But what can we do to make it better? Like, what can I do in my community to make it a little bit better? Mm. And I was really lucky enough to be able to go out to Oakland and work with Crystal Wapipaw and her team before they opened and talk to them about, you know, what it really means to be a chef, in my, from my opinion, because I think that the more we stand in solidarity with each other and support each other and make it not a competition, the better chance we have of healing from those things and really reclaiming our space and moving towards that land back, hopefully, that goal of, you know, really being able to reclaim our culture in ways that we haven't been able to yet. Mm.
Elena Terry is executive chef and founder of Wildberries, a nonprofit that helps heal and educate Indigenous communities through ancestral food. Crystal Wapipaw is chef and owner of the recently opened Wapipaw's Kitchen in Oakland's Fruitvale Village. Everyone on her staff is Indigenous, and you can find hours on the menu at yourcallradio.org. Kimberly Tilson Braveheart is co-owner of the Etiquette Catering Company in Rapid City, South Dakota. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Let's hear from Paul in San Francisco. Hi, Paul. Thanks for holding.
Hey, Rose. Good morning. I listen to your show when I can. This is Paul Heibel. Shout out to my nieces, Crystal and Kim and Elena. I haven't met you yet, but probably I'd be your uncle, too, if we got there. So these chefs can chef it, as they say in Indian country. These Wapipaw's kitchen is awesome. Kim can cook. So I'm just saying good morning to you, my dears, and thank you for having me on, Rose. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Paul. Great to hear from you. Thank you. Let's go next to Dorothy in San Francisco. Hi, Dorothy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call. This is a wonderful movement. May it grow and prosper.
Yes.
My question is, can a vegetarian find happiness at a restaurant serving native foods?
I love your question. I'm a longtime vegan, and yes, there's lots and lots of food we can eat. Crystal, for example, you've got a lot of vegan and vegetarian foods on your menu.
Yes, I do. And of course, just we even have a vegan three sisters soup. We have lots of indigenous salads, and it's all in season. So please stop by.
Yes. What is in the soup?
Oh, we have brown temporary bean. We have squash. We have hominy, and it's cooked in a plant-based veggie base, and it's simmered with culinary sage. It's very, very delicious, and it's been selling off the roofs on this one.
And the strawberry salad also looks amazing.
Yes, and right now we have a harvest salad, which is with squash and persimmons.
And then you also have lots of, the bars are also vegan.
Yes, they are.
Great. Does anyone else want to add vegetarian or vegan, Kim? In fact, I think I saw one of your offerings on your Facebook page. You've got the photos are just gorgeous. Can you just talk about vegan or veggie options?
Sure. One of the things that I really love using is cashews, and I make my own cashew cream, and I do a pumpkin, carrot, squash bisque that is all dairy-free and meat-free, and I roast pumpkin seeds for the very top, which is delicious and yummy, and people literally call it my magic pumpkin soup, and I only make it a couple times a year. And it sells out almost immediately. People go crazy over it.
Wow.
I did want to do one quick correction. I went through a rebranding, and my company is called Chef Braveheart Modern Indigenous, if you're looking for me online or social media.
Okay. Chef Braveheart Modern.
And it's just solely owned by me.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And we have links to your work on our website, yourcallradio.org. Elena, anything to add on veggie foods?
Absolutely. We were great cultivators and foragers and people who preserved. So it wasn't just all meat all the time. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of vegetarian and vegan options, and it is like just naturally gluten-free. There's so many benefits to the food that I think it refers back to the question that you asked earlier about what foods are indigenous that we might not realize are. And they're so plentiful and flavorful and unique that they don't need manipulation. They just need to be highlighted and appreciated. Mm-hmm. So definitely try it.
You know, and I don't know if this is a silly question, but looking at your menus, you know, I'm so bothered by factory farms and what it has done to the land, what it does to the animals. I mean, it's just so wrong on so many levels. And I just wonder, you know, looking at the foods that you all eat, I had a different reaction to them, assuming that they're not from factory farms. And it's such a different way to treat the land and to treat the animals. Crystal, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. Well, for instance, what you'll see when you come here to Whopper Paws Kitchen, you'll see a lot of bison. And we only have like three bison ranches here in California. And we're actually here in Oakland. We're closest to the closest one is Ukiah Bison Ranch for me to get access to. I like serving bison for one. It's really lean and clean, and it's from here. And then the other, my people's food, which I'm Kickapoo, we have a lot of turkey. We have a lot of venison. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of rabbit and things like that. So you'll see what I offer is how I source my foods. And definitely number one is from the Ukiah Bison Ranch. And then the other is I'm meeting more and more different ranches, like in the Petaluma area, which is probably much closer to me to access. So the more closer I can access, especially when it comes to my protein, is the better. And then from the Washington area is like from our salmon, but right now it's kind of slow in the salmon season, what's going on. So I always try to just to kind of offer the healthy meats and also keep to my meats that were my tribe eats. But then We have a lot of bison meatballs, for instance. We have a lot of bison roast that we offer. And that is because we're so close to the ranch. The more closer I can be to protein ranches, the more better. And so I always have this rule, how many steps and how many transactions we got to do to get our foods. I always like to have less transactions. Like, for instance, when it comes to our beans, our corn, even our maple, different things like that. I like to have it in less than 3 to 4 transactions. And when it comes to our produce, that's in 3 transactions. That's the person that's planting the seeds. That's the person that's harvesting. And that's the person that gives them to me. And then how I give it on the plate. And so I always have that in the back of my mind is how are we going to access this and how many transactions. And I think when it comes to that, when it comes to farms, there's so many unhealthy farms out there. But then if you kind of really, really take your time and look, especially as me, as being a business owner, I work with Black farmers. I work with Native farmers, all different kind of farmers. And I formed all these relationships. So I always talk about it didn't come overnight. That's for sure.
Right. You know, you reminded me, it would be such an interesting show to look at the animals that were here and the animals that were brought over. So if I have it right, the settlers brought over chickens, pigs, and cows, right?
Yes.
Okay. And I mean, in many ways, they wreaked havoc on the land. But that's we don't have enough time for that. I mean, we can even do an entire show. That's a whole other show. And also just the history of bison. I mean, this is so, so important to really talk about. I mean, when you look at the official numbers, there were 30 to 60 million bison in North America in the 1500s, according to the Fish and Wildlife Service. By the end of the 1800s, settlers had decimated the population.
Intentionally, because of manifest destiny. I mean, so there was a policy literally created by the U.S. government. I'm sorry to just jump in.
No, please.
It was literally a policy created by the U.S. government to rid the lands of our indigenous bison because that would starve out the indigenous people of this land.
Mm. It's such important history. Anything to add, Kim, on just, you know, knowing about the foods that were here and then the animals that were brought over, and then also how indigenous chefs like yourselves source animal products, which is so completely different from this factory farm slaughterhouse, you know, that we see today that is really, really affecting, especially communities of color.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really lucky because I have access to lots of bison and buffalo. Also here we have trout and fish, different types of fish, as well as duck. And I use a lot of duck fat in my foods. So I think those things are important. Again, just as Crystal had said, are the relationships that we build with our local farmers. I would say a majority of my 90% of all of the vegetables and fruit that I use are local, organic farmers, small farm base. And I do believe that it affects the quality of our food, the flavor of our food, and also the way that it is encapsulated by someone who consumes it. And I think that and it's also the thing too, that people don't quite want to talk about from a margin standpoint. It does affect our businesses and affect the way that we sell. I mean, I've been told people, oh, you're so expensive. And I'm like, okay. you know, because it's hours and hours procuring and having these relationships. And I legit, like, I do use some hog from a local farmer, and all of the vegetables from my kitchen go to feed those hogs. And I go to the farms. I know how they're treated. I am aware of the animals. Our buffalo is usually field harvested by us or another indigenous person. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important because for us, it's also about honoring of those ingredients, honoring of those animals, and honoring of ourselves in that way, because it is a spiritual experience. Right. And I believe it was Elena said, you know, when we're preparing our foods, for us, it's a prayer. Mm-hmm. We are thinking about the way that those ingredients have come to us. We are honoring our Mother Earth that way. But also, you know, in prayer, we're speaking our love language through our food. Mm. And it's how we heal and provide medicine of healing to the people in our communities.
So beautiful. I love that. Thank you so much. Crystal, we have a couple of questions about your hours and where you're located for people who are not online. Can you just let us know quickly?
Oh, yes. I'm located over here in the Fruit Bell Village, literally across the street from the Fruit Bell BART station. So there's huge parking. And then our hours are from 11 to 6 p.m. And we do offer reservations on resi.com.
Great. I cannot wait to bring my dad and maybe some other relatives with me to check out the restaurant. It's going to be an amazing experience. Crystal Wapepa is chef and owner of the recently opened Wapepa's Kitchen in Oakland's Fruitvale Village. Everyone on her staff is indigenous. Crystal was born and raised in Oakland and is an enrolled member of the Kickapoo Nation of Oklahoma. Crystal, again, huge congratulations on the opening of your restaurant, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for asking.
Elena Terry is executive chef and founder of Wildberries, a nonprofit that helps heal and educate indigenous communities through ancestral food. Elena is a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation. Elena, thank you so much for your great work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me and for giving us the space to share such a beautiful conversation. Ladies, you are inspiring and amazing, and I always enjoy speaking with you. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Kimberly Tilson Braveheart is co-owner of the Chef Braveheart Modern Indigenous in Rapid City, South Dakota. Kim is a member of the Oglala Lakota Nation on the Pine Ridge Indian Reserve in South Dakota. Kim, thank you so much for your great work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. And ladies, it's such an honor to be with all of you and hear your voices. I'm excited and hope that we get to work with each other in 2022. And I want to give a shout out to my Uncle Paul and all the other relatives in the Bay Area. Love y'all.
Thank you. And we'd love to have you all back in 2022. And you can find links to the great work of Kim, Elena, and Crystal at yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.